Welcome back, WNST, Tassel Baltimore and Baltimore Positive, and we are positively into a weekend here, Don Mohler, where, you know, chaos is sort of broken out all over the country, and I know we had post-election stuff, and we're sort of in this netherworld of maybe having election results, and we've been trying to get this guy on for a long time. So before I get any further, former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler is our co-host here on Baltimore Positive, and he has had Fadley's more recently than I, and probably State Fair more recently than I, because you were exploring the Mexican options over there in Catonsville, correct?
I'm telling you, it's State Fair the other day for the double bacon cheeseburger. Not good for the diet, but really good for the stomach.
Good for the soul.
I did get a sneak peek at the new Mexican restaurant that the State Fair group, Evan and Keith, are going to open up across the street. So it's going to be fantastic. So, again, support all our local businesses. And you've got Mohler and Gary Realty out there. Jeff Mohler's still working hard to sell houses, list houses during the pandemic. Give Jeff a call, 410-746-1547. And we're going to have to ask our guest in a minute, Nestor, if he's talk a little bit about our ice cream sponsor, because I think our guest may like some ice cream.
Well, what happens here on the set is I'm having more and more empty containers because we're eating it here. So the pistachio, you can't have it because it's gone. I mean, you know that my favorite flavors are the ones that are here because they're gone. Honey Graham is here. And then I have sort of the old school chocolate love. And this is when you get it hand packed, this is the way they do it for you. So we appreciate our friends at Daharka, made in Baltimore. We'll be telling you more about them and actually having lots and lots of their employees and the people that make this delicious ice cream because they are children of Baltimore. They employ Baltimore City folks, and I tell you what, no one has done more with the children of Baltimore and trying to uplift children and talk about education than our next guest. Now, I'm not going to insult our next guest, but when I think of Tim Tootin, I think of the guy I run into in the Chick-fil-A who's always very polite to me and very nice to me. I think of him as the other one, and he said, "No, that's my dad on TV." And I said, "You know, all this time I've been seeing Dr. Tootin and finding out about the ministry and all the other stuff and the education on TV, I run into your son a whole lot more than I run into you, Tim."
Well, he's a pretty popular guy.
As are you. How are you and how are you holding up through all this? I would think through an election and a news cycle and just where we are and schools being where they are. And Don and I have talked so much about education the last couple of months. This has been an unprecedented time, even for a grizzled vet like you, who feels like you've talked about everything about Kerwin and all the other basic education things. This whole thing where kids are at home and we have to figure this out, this is a new one, right?
It definitely is. I think that when you consider news, it's always changing every day. And first of all, let me just say that it's great to hear your voice, and you're a big star, as well as Don Mohler, who I've known for all of my education career. But I think when this first started out, we had to adapt, and we're still adapting. And it's unprecedented in terms of what we're having to cover. And I said to someone, I said, I'm a grandparent. I said, I can't say that I know what it's like to teach kids from home. But certainly it is very different. It's going to be a very interesting summer and fall as it relates to education. It won't be the same.
Don, for you in thinking this thing through, if you're a soup, if you're a principal, if you're a guidance counselor like you were for me in 1982, I can't imagine how on fire your mind is, especially for your daughter, right, at this point, and the uncertainty for everything. Because the one thing you always represented in my life as a guidance counselor, as a principal or VP, wherever you were, there's a level of certainty we're all looking to from our teachers and our elders and our educators and the system, right? We expect the system to work, right?
Well, it is interesting, and actually I should send to our guest, it's interesting that you mentioned, and Tim knows my daughter, who's the principal at Hillcrest Elementary School. She just prepared, which principals are doing all over the country, she had to prepare a video farewell for her fifth graders, as opposed to the way they would typically celebrate, which would be a real wonderful celebration in the multipurpose room with parents and grandparents and the teachers hugging the kids and saying goodbye to the kids and then going out for a picnic on the school grounds. She had to film a video farewell to them. And one of the things that I was struck by when I was talking to her about that particular endeavor was she said to me, "Dad, I hope it's not, excuse me, I hope it's not too sad." And I thought, wow, what a sign of the times that we even have to think about whether our message is too sad, because you're trying to acknowledge a pandemic, but at the same time paint a bright future. And it has to be challenging. I mean, Tim, going back to you, you have three children, two grandchildren. Talk about the experience that you've had with them during this pandemic, and what your children and what your grandchildren have experienced and expressed to you.
And don't be surprised that my oldest daughter is an educator. And she
what a shocker.
In the city of Indianapolis, one of the suburbs there. And I do have two grandsons. And so she did the distance learning with her students and, of course, keeping the boys on point. But my youngest grandson said my wish was to have Pop to come see me.
Oh, wow.
And I just didn't want to, you know, didn't want to travel yet. But, yeah, it is certainly something. We used to just hop on the plane, do Southwest, spend some time with them. But, you know, FaceTime is okay, but it's not the real thing. And this is one of those times that you really look to see them in the near future. But it's different. And to see them, it's going to mean probably an old school, you know, drive across the country, because I don't think I'm ready to fly just yet. But yeah, I think
AAA will be more popular than ever, Tim. I think because I think you are going to see folks jumping in cars. I know my wife was just talking about we're scheduled in several months. I forget exactly when it is, but in a few months to head to Disney World with kids when it reopens and it's safe to do so. My wife said, you know, like you said,
family roadster, baby. I see Chevy Chase. Right. I see South of the Border with you.
Now, see, you don't know anything about the old school triptych. Don't you remember that? You thought you were somebody when you had your little.
Well, Tim, you know, it is so great to talk to you, and I have to say, when Nestor and I, like so many others, been glued to the TV, been heartbroken by what happened to George Floyd, just sort of continuing a legacy of attacks on people of color, African Americans, by rogue police officers in the nation. And you and I, you're right, Tim, we've known each other now for 32 years. You actually probably have interviewed me in each one of those 32 years multiple times.
You know, that makes you an expert, Moeller.
Oh, my God. I mean, Tim put that microphone in his buddies back there. As I said, numerous times every year. But when we watch the horror of a young man basically being asphyxiated, and we then watch the heartbreak that leads to outrage, Nestor and I said, we have to do a series of interviews with people who are involved in the community, but also we have to have an honest conversation about race. And it's really difficult to have an honest conversation about race. And I can't think of anyone better to really kick that series off with than you, Tim. You're a minister, you're an educator, you're a reporter, and you're a dad and a granddad. As an African American male,
absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, when I think about this, I have to go back and give you a bit of history. I grew up in what I call the Deep South. People think of Florida as, you know, Disney World, but there are other parts of Florida. I grew up in North Florida, a very small community, famous for the Suwannee River. That's my whole county, Suwannee. And growing up as an African-American male during, the early 70s to where there was segregation still going on with pools, theaters, and my brother and myself, both males, obviously, and two sisters, it was always just this sense of, let's just say it, it's kind of staying in your place. I mean, you knew what could happen, and your parents would always tell you to make sure that you were careful about black or white, who you would associate with. But it was some challenging times back then. But certainly, when I think of the South, when I think of growing up and think of having to pass what they call the white pool to get to the black pool, to be up into sixth grade in the segregated school system, that basically you had to get the old books that were used, the old used school buses. And I never forget that in maybe 71, they said, hey, you can go to the white school. So you mean the school that's painted white? So certainly growing up in that environment, but yet feeling the sting of racism, it's amazing, but you learn and you pray and you live above that.
No, I would think there, you called it the sting. I mean, I would think it's even more that when you were talking about your parents, you would think, the law won't have your back, Tim. You know, in 1971, if something goes down, you know, the lawyer's only going to be able to do so much for you. And, you know, and I sat with my wife and I watched To Kill a Mockingbird about 8 months ago on a football trip. It just happened to be on. My wife and I were in a hotel room in Seattle or whatever. She put it on. It was raining outside, and it's her favorite movie. And I watched it, and I hadn't seen it in 30 years. And I wanted to just shake the TV. You know what I mean? Literally a Gregory Peck 50 years later. And now 6 months later, here we are. We went from talking about Kerwin and all of this aspirational, incredible stuff to me and my wife looking out the window. And I had tears in my eyes two nights ago. We heard protesters coming through right in front of Governor Schaefer. Okay, so you know where I am. I've seen your truck down there shooting. It's right in front of my house. It used to be called Hooters. It used to be called Capital City. It used to be called Phillips. Now it's called closed, but you know Governor Schaefer's there wearing his mask, and it was just about dark. It was about 8 o'clock, and I heard the noise. I looked out the window. I looked down, and there were about 300. I got my binoculars out, which I don't do much, and I got out. And I looked down just to see who was out there, and it was very, very clear that this was 300 people in a neighborhood or a church group or a ministry that got together. There were six-year-old little girls holding hands with mothers and aunts and uncles and young people on bikes, a lot of people with masks, a lot of people social distancing. So I know these people were enlightened folks. And as I watched them march up Light Street out my window, I couldn't contain myself to think the power in that and the fact that it's come to this, Tim.
You know, it is, I tell you, but what I've always been blessed by is a mutual respect. You know, you talk about Don Mohler. I mean, certainly, here's someone who is an encourager. Here's someone who I have great respect for. And that goes beyond race. But just you learn to respect people if they respect you. You talked about my son earlier. I'll always say to him, because I'm the father of a black male, that if you get pulled over, here's what you ought to do. And I could tell you nothing against the Baltimore County Police Department, but there have been incidents where I've been profiled. That's not unusual for me. When I say that, I mean that just because I'm not Tim Tootin, the news guy. I'm not Tim Tootin wearing some kind of memorabilia from WBAL, but I'm still bigger than that. But it's reality. And it is like a sting. Racism is what it is. But you learn, you pray to live above that and connect with like-minded people. And when I say like-minded, I'm talking to two like-minded people now who just love people, who fear God, who are people who, look for solutions.
Tim, I am, when you talk about that so honestly, I remember that you and I, it couldn't have been a week after, I forget, who knows why you were interviewing me, maybe it was American Education Week, I don't remember. But it was a week or two after President Obama was elected, and you and I, as you came to interview me, we gave each other a big hug, which we typically do, and I said to you, did you ever think in your lifetime, and before I could finish, you said, never, doctor, in that shooting voice, never. Never thought I'd see it. So there's no doubt we've made progress in a lot of areas, but but yet we haven't made progress. You just mentioned, and you sort of glossed over it, and it's one thing that I'm always struck by. You said, you know, I teach my children, my grandchildren, we all do, how to behave. I've been taught when you're stopped by the police. I've had African-American friends say to me, it's called the talk. Talk for our listeners, and again, we're with longtime WBAL-TV education reporter Tim Tootin, doctor of ministry, Harvest Christian Ministries. We're going to have him talk about that in a little while. But Tim, for those listening, share with us what it means to have the talk with your son. And that's what we talked about, your son. So tell us what that means to have the talk.
You know, one of the humbling experiences, every Martin Luther King holiday, I would pull the kids downstairs. And this is tradition. And I'd pull out what was in a VHS. And there was a half-hour documentary on the Civil Rights Movement. And I would... That was mandatory before distance learning. You had to watch that whole video and to see Dr. King, the progress, the water hose, the dogs, etc. And now my daughter does that for her sons so they can watch that. Because when you live in a predominant community, when I say predominant, I mean you maybe you're the only black family or two in the neighborhood. You want them to realize that you are African-American. And by the way, very proud, but you also know that there are persons who may have a certain mindset, even to this day, Don. I'll go out walking now in certain places, and you just have to be in your mind. I don't think it's an illusion that, yes, I'm a black male, and I try to give a smile, but there is a certain mindset, and that may go another way. But I have learned just to be respectful, and that's what the Tootins taught me. That's what Doris and James Tootin taught me, is to be respectful in this house. And Mom would always say, don't let me come get you out of jail. That was her thing, because she represents the Tootin house. As I'm sure both of you represent that family name. So it is something that we learn to not complain about. You just try to live above that. I recall radio, and I don't know if you know this, Nestor, my beginnings were in radio.
Well, that's why you turned out so good, right?
And I'll make this very short. My desire at an early age, and this is all along the lines of race, Don, is I used to imitate the announcers at the little old radio station, WNER, Thousand Water, and I would imitate these guys at 9, 10, 12 years old, and my mother did domestic work. Where she would clean that radio station. It was one of her places she would stop and clean, even though she was a valedictorian. But when I told her I wanted to do radio, she took me out to that building at 14 and said, this is my son, and he wants to be on the radio. And they said, well, he's not old enough yet, but there was a guy named Bill Savitz who never forgot that and said, Timmy, you've got a great voice. Let's work on you, man. And to this day, I'm certainly thankful for people, not kind white people, but kind people who say, yeah, you know, you may have a speech impediment, which I did at the time, but you can overcome this. And so there's good in all of this. They're good people. I think we look at the people and not necessarily all the time the larger picture. But there's so many good examples of people getting along, respecting each other, and that's so key, Don.
Tim Tootin is our guest. He's the education reporter, pastor, of course, at the Harvest Christian Ministries, but you know him from the television. And, you know, to inject a little levity into this, you know, Mueller was my high school guidance counselor in 1982, and I'm going to share this with you, and I'm going to share it with Jane Miller because it'll mean something to her as well. He told me I was going to be the next Chris Thomas.
Oh, boy.
That's true, Tim. I mean,
you're larger than that.
and I was even going to find that golden sombrero.
I have the Ursay dummy, so I mean, at least I have that. You know, Tim, I can't help but look at Suwannee on the map and, you know the old song, and I had never really looked
way
up
down the, upon the Suwannee River.
There you go. And, you know, just west of Gainesville, where I think of Lynyrd Skynyrd and Tom Petty and rock and roll and Florida Gators and all that stuff.
Stop there. I'm a Florida
I know you are. I know you are.
Okay,
you were almost. You almost got it honest, though. You were almost equidistant between Gainesville and Tallahassee. You're not too far from either one. But the incident of the young man running, and I think of you, and I think of you in the South, and I think of 1971 and what your parents told you, I can only imagine what, you know, which was an execution in the street, you know, a white execution in the street in Brunswick. And I think of Brunswick stew because I'm, you know, my mother was from Abbeville, South Carolina. So I think of Southern things. I can't get that out of my mind. And certainly that horrific image set the stage for the next thing with George Lloyd, which is literally in the last 3 weeks. But, you know, I go back to the South and what that represented for seeing that and thinking of To Kill a Mockingbird and all of that and thinking, this is 2020. How can this still be going on?
It really is amazing. And I could tell you also there was a certain fear. Because, and I'll say this, because way down upon the Suwannee River, we all knew that. But there was an incident that took place in my mother's life, and she would have been about 90 now. She was still living. And it was one of her good friends, it's documented, who worked at a local store. And a white female came in, and he said to her, "Let me write you a song." And some of the people of that town came to his house. And there were so many hangings that took place in the Suwannee River. I could count the times on one hand that I've gone to the Suwannee River because mother would say that to let you know that, you know, when it comes to interracial relationships with a female, just be careful, because she would tell the George Howard story, her friend. She would tell the Reuben McCollum story, which is very historical of a woman who was having an affair with a white legislator, and she killed him. And so, I mean, there's so much embedded in that community, but you would hear the stories, and just to be aware of where you go, what you say, where you are. But it's just was a sign of the times. And you look, as Dunn said, 2020, you still just continue to pray, and you continue to embrace relationships that mean so much to you and to your family, your community.
Tim, again, looking at the current situation, a lot of folks last week watched in horror, and certainly journalists like you and Nestor and others watched in horror as CNN journalist Omar Jimenez was arrested for simply reporting the news in Minneapolis.
Well, that was just the beginning, right? Like, literally. That
was the beginning. But a lot of people don't know, Nestor, that Omar really began his broadcasting career at WBAL-TV as a young reporter. Tim, I know you knew Omar. What were your thoughts as a journalist when you saw that? And I'm curious if you have communicated with Omar since that event.
You won't find a nicer young man, and I would say this because when you become seasoned, everybody's a young man.
And I recall, and we're not all so nice when we get older.
and I recall his coming. He had done some intern work at CNN. When he got there, it reminded me much better than a 28-year-old Tim Tootin. But you talking, it was. Let me just give you the rundown. Now, on the end was Omar, and then there was Rob Roblin. And there's Jennifer Fresciati, and then me. So that was quite some role.
That's an all-star role.
Yeah, that's an all-star role. And he was, and he is, not was, is the nicest person and the person who could handle that. You know, I mean, he said, what can I do? What do you want me to stand? And I've never seen Omar get to that level. I'm not sure how I would have reacted, Don. I'm not sure how I would have reacted in that moment, but a level-headed, but it's one of those things that when you are the media, people don't think that you have a real life. You think you're just the media. No, my name is Tim. I happen to work in the industry that I enjoy, that I love, that supported my family, but I'm also aware there's certain attitudes about the media. And people assume that you're the media, you must be a left-wing liberal. No.
Isn't it amazing that they think we all get in a room together like Maxwell Smart and the cones come down and we take some order from someone? And that's the amazing part. I'm thinking, are you that dumb, really? I mean, that we're all in this together, right? We have meetings in the middle of the night, right?
And that's what's so amazing, because people have to realize that you are a person. And Don, you know this. You are a person, and then you have a profession, and they line up. And so I can very easily, when I leave in the evening, I'm still Tim Tootin, and I'll always be that media guy. But just to know that there are people like Omar, a lot of us who are respectful of the parameters and the boundaries, because we don't want to make the news. And so if someone asks you to get back, then you get back. And we taught that within the news organization. You want to cover the news. You have the right to do it. But I didn't see any rhyme or reason to that. I just don't know if it was media bias, if it was, race. But all I know is that we know Omar. And knowing Omar, you certainly know the kind of person he is. And I shared with my brother in Florida. I said, man, that's Omar. You wouldn't find a nicer person and a more respectable person.
He was... As you said, Tim, one of the young ladies, you got to know her a little bit as well, but the creative director and communication specialist for Baltimore County government, still there, young lady named Lauren Watley, immediately texted me when she saw it, because Omar did a series at BAL called, he was sort of mimicking the Mike Rowe thing, the dirtiest jobs. You may remember that.
Right. Oh, yeah. And that was for a guy of his age. I said, you go for it, man.
But
it was well done.
We wanted to go out to Baltimore County's recycling centers and be one of the workers. And Lauren took you now and set all that up. And she said, he just could not have been easier to work with and more polite. So it really was a shock. That's what I said to my wife, same thing you said to your brother. I said, Linda, you don't understand. He's one of the nicest young men I've encountered in all
and
my
life. And I can
years.
Always be said about people in general. Not everybody's nice.
I just texted him and I said, man, hang in there. You did a great job. Tim, we like to talk on Baltimore Positive about personal journeys. And yours fascinates me. You are an incredibly successful journalist. You didn't really have to do anything else. I mean, you're sort of an icon in the Baltimore region, across the state, really. And then you decide to enter the ministry, and you decide to pursue a doctorate. Talk a little bit about that journey and what led you down that spiritual path.
It's amazing that you would say that, because when I first moved to the Baltimore area from West Virginia, where it was my last job before getting here, and I said, God, if I'd known that you were going to have me to pastor and be, I would have stayed on the Beltway. I would have never gotten off, because life is like that. But growing up in a religious and a faith-filled home, and in my new book, I kind of refer to that called Leading by Example. And so that was one thing, that we lived next door to the church. If you were a Tootin, you had to go to church. If you were a Tootin, I played, Joseph, wise man, for every play. My mom was over all the plays, and we had to recite speeches. So even then, I was getting training for broadcasting. But it was just something that I never desired. I don't think people run after ministry or calling. It usually runs after you. And so when I got to Baltimore, and after some years of being involved with a church, I wanted to go out and just speak, but not preach. I'd rather preach, And so what happened is, over time, I talked with you and many others. I got my master's degree at St. Mary's Ecumenical Institute. And then I remember saying, I'm going to try for my doctorate. And you gave me the best advice that anyone could give. You said, doctor, it is a marathon. You can't just like overnight. And that was the greatest help that you gave me. But it really is a great calling. I'm passionate about helping people. And it was like I was destined to be one who encouraged. But getting the background and getting, the credentials was so important. And now during this pandemic, I get to preach every Sunday from my basement. And so we've set up a little studio, a monitor, and so my family is the production team. But I tell you, it is a love for God. And I'm never, as Paul said, never ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I'm just so excited to be used and so excited to be able to encourage someone, be it, at the local store or in the community. So it was a journey. It is a journey. I never thought in a million years I would preach 2 million that I would pastor a church, Harvest Christian Ministries. That's a mouthful, but that I had no plans. It was God's plan.
It's amazing. And Tim, I'm the proud owner of a signed copy of Leading by Example. I want you to talk a little bit about the main themes of that book. But first of all, people are listening. They're saying, man, I think I'd like to read a book by this guy. Where can they get the book, Tim?
Well, only in the Tim Tootin way. Go to timtootintv.com.
Yeah, I just pulled it up. It's right here. It's on Amazon. It's everywhere. You know, there's video of you and Jen sitting and talking about it for a little while,
indeed.
Right?
But if you go to timtootintv.com, we'll go around Amazon. I'll send you an autographed copy.
There you go.
To you. And, when you become a publisher, you love Amazon, but you want to cut the middleman out. But I have plenty still available. Would love to get one to you. And the premise of that book, Don, came out of my dissertation.
I love the book. First of all, Nestor, before Tim gets to the premise, you need to order it. You need to go to Tim Tootin and get your autographed copy. I really enjoyed the book. I think I read it on a plane trip, read the whole thing. Just on one leg of the trip. So, yeah, give us sort of the breakdown of the book, what led to it, and what you were trying to communicate there, Tim.
Well, I started the work here in Baltimore County with Harvest Christian Ministries, and I thought going in, Don, that, you do a little project and you become a doctor. Well, that's not the way it happens. if you're a doctor, it's a lot of work. It's research. And I found within my own congregation of about 90 people, there were persons who would come to me and say, Reverend, you're the Reverend. Tell Johnny about, this in the Bible, because, you're the pastor. And I kept hearing parents say that. And I said, well, what if I equip you to teach your own child? What if I gave you the tools that you needed to lay out a lesson plan? And here's where having a Don Moeller and a Fallon Cothrell, my daughter, who said to me, well, that means a lesson plan. So this is researched. It is a great at-home tool, and you walk through it. There's age appropriate, and so that was so important to me, that it's so important for you to share things like faith. I mean, don't put the pressure on the pastor or the priest or the rabbi or the imam, but you should be the person in your home that lays the foundation. You don't have to be an expert, but you can talk about your own life's journey. And that's what this book does. It gives you an opportunity to become the teacher, and parents have been doing a whole lot of that lately. You become the teacher, you share with them, they get to learn your experience, and it's really kind of a handbook. It's a workbook.
Tim Tootin is our guest. Leading by Example is the book, A Parental Guide to Teaching and Modeling Christian Faith. Don Moeller, of course, here is part of Baltimore Positive. Tim, I want to go back, that if there were no pandemic and there were no riots and none of this, we'd be talking about Kerwin right now, right? We'd be talking about educating our kids. We'd be talking about kids going to pools and getting ready for the summer.
Absolutely.
And we'd be talking about next year. Everything stopped right around, March 12th, 13th, 15th, wherever it is. Roll me back a little bit, 10 weeks, to Kerwin, because we spent so much time over the better part of the first year, whether it was Nancy Grasmick or whether it was Dr. Sonia Santelises or, any number of educators. This is what you do for a living. I know BAL doesn't give you 2-3 hours on a weekend to sit around and talk about Kerwin. It happens in 30 and 60 second sound bites, and it's down in Annapolis, and there's talking heads like Don that come your way for 15 seconds or whatever. We've really tried to stretch it out. I'd love to hear your thoughts on where it was, where it is, and where it might be.
Let me say, first of all, and this is not being a media person, that Rick Kerwin is one of the nicest people that you'll ever find. And I followed his career from University of Maryland, and very passionate about what he believed and what so many others believe is important for our children across the state. But that was something worth covering and something worth putting out there, because there are inequities. Let's face it, there are inequities And it's so important that people get a shot, get a chance. I mentioned to you earlier about growing up in a school district that we got all used books, all used buses, all old buildings. And so I think Kerwin is one of those things and one of those attempts to really try, and this is such a worn-out saying, you know, leveling the playing field. But not even leveling it, but bringing it to a point to where it looks level. And so covering that, I think, was key. There's certainly different opinions across the state, depending on the different districts. But I think that people who are in education, if you're Don Moeller, if you're his daughter, Ms. Lynch, Dr. Lynch, it certainly is something that you want every kid to get a chance. And I think Kerwin spoke to that in so many ways. Not perfect, but it spoke to that.
Well, I was going to ask you, we're going to have a new mayor here at some point in November. We're hopefully going to get through coronavirus and everything that's going on. Hopefully, I think we all can agree we hope we have a new president and have to believe that and work toward that between now and November 3rd. But the thought of, you know, where the educational system in the city, we're going to have a mayor, they're going to have a crime plan and a transportation plan, education plan. From the educational side, if I made you the education czar of Baltimore City, and I know you've been covering this for four decades, Tim.
Help us, Lord.
You're in charge now. Fundamentally, other than money, and I'll give you that. I'll give you unlimited resources, unlimited money. What foundationally needs to happen here as you've witnessed it in your four decades?
And I think that I watched a video on yesterday. I can't think of the name of it, but it talked about the inequities, and it talked about communities. And I live in Baltimore County, proud Baltimore County resident. But when I crossed the line, I know that there are many more challenges that I never forget, and you know Charles Dunn, a longtime photographer, now chief operations manager.
At He's the man. The big man. Yeah, he's the big man.
And we went over it, and I'm getting back to your question. We went over to Cherry Hill Elementary School to do a story. We walked in the office. Charles is a Howard County guy, and we see a young man in the office, and we begin to recite our suburban speech. Young man, here's what you ought to be doing. And, well, why are you in the office? And we walked around the corner. The principal says, listen, he just witnessed his mom, shoot herself a couple of days ago. And all of a sudden then that narrative of one size does not fit all. And I did not know and had no idea of what these kids were bringing to school with them. And so I think when it comes to, psychological services, social services, there are many things that have to happen before that young man or woman gets to school. And people can say, oh, but the per pupil is, but you can't put a price on that. There are many challenging issues that students and families bring with them, not to say they aren't existing in other places. But I think if I was the czar, I would certainly look at relationships and trying to build up the family.
Well, wow. Dr. Tootin, we've really enjoyed this visit. It's been too long. I mean, here's the problem. We're a year and a half into this now, and there's still folks like you sort of lingering. We're going to catch Jane Miller at some point, too. We caught Rodericks last week, you know, right. So we're finding people around town.
Catch them all,
catch Jane Miller. All stars, aren't they? Hey, Nestor, before we run, let me tell you real quick, while we have Tim. As I said, he's probably interviewed me. In 32 years, he's probably interviewed me 100 times.
So 101.
There are 101.
Well, you got even with him today.
But there are two Tim Tootin moments that stand out. I'll start with one. Again, my neighbor, Mindy Becerra, who seems like she's been here forever now, but Tim's giggling because he remembers this. It was probably her, I don't remember what year Mindy came to town, but it was probably her first year. And it was before a Board of Education meeting, or her first week, rather, early in her career.
Right.
The Board of Education meeting, and I forget what the issue was. It was controversial. And I was the assistant superintendent for communications, and Mindy wanted me to comment. And I had made a decision early in the day that we were simply going to say no comment and just not have anything to add to the situation. We weren't going to do any media. So I go down, and Mindy says, Don, I'd like to get a comment. And I go, Mindy, I'm sorry, we're just not going to comment on that. And I go into the meeting, and 5 minutes later, my phone rings, and it's Dr. Tim Tootin. And he's going, Don, come on now. It's your first week in Baltimore. She needs an interview. Do me a favor. Come on, man. Give her some
snacks. Well, you wouldn't have been real popular with me with the no comment that day.
So I go back out, and I grab Mindy, and I say, all right, you owe Tootin' forever. Let's go out and I'll give you some Sam.
That's because I knew that she was a quality person, and I knew that you were too. And also, Mindy, she's your cadence book girl. She's a wonderful lady, and I knew that she wouldn't.
She's my neighbor.
Set you up.
Her buddy.
Yeah, and I knew that she wouldn't try to go for a gotcha moment. I said, "Come on, doctor." You know,
that's exactly what he said. Then, come on, doctor, go out and give her some sand. I said, "All right, I'll go out and give her some sand." And the other one, Nestor, you will love this. And my former boss is smiling up in heaven right now. Famous day. Tim knows what I'm going to say. The famous day where there were protesters. We were breaking ground for a new school out in Mays Chapel, and the protesters didn't want it. They didn't want a school, or even though the Board of Ed had owned this land forever, they didn't want a school taking away their open space in the neighborhood. And there were a bunch of older protesters there, and the children were trying to sing and speak, and the protesters were screaming and shouting, and the kids were
classic.
they were getting scared, and it pushed my boss's butt and it led to the famous "It's my turn to talk, it's your turn to listen" moment.
Listen, yes.
Right up Nestor's alley, which he would see. Nestor loves that in the public. Kevin had had enough, and he said, "Knock it off, you're acting like jerks. It's my turn to talk. It's your turn to listen." And right away, as the communications director and chief of staff, I'm going, "Oh, my Lord of mercy." And I go back.
You don't think I would be confrontational as a public figure?
So I go back to the office. Tim wasn't covering. There was a reporter there. Tim wasn't there. And literally, I'm not in the office for an hour. My assistant says, "Don, Tim's on the phone," and I'm going, "Oh, God." And all I do when I get on the phone, all I hear is this belly laugh. Tim is just laughing. He's going, "Doctor, this is some of the best TV we've ever had."
Now, don't repeat this.
I said, I guess I can't talk you into not running this.
There is a person, and I'm sworn to silence, who was a photographer at Channel 11, and that person used to have it. Their ringtone was Kevin. "It's my turn to be," if I do that, I'd get in big trouble.
"Turn to listen."
That's the ringtone.
Did you ever say that as a school principal, Don? Did he pick that up from you?
I don't know, but here's the footnote to that story, and I know we've held him way too long, but it was the best part. The best part of Kevin Kamenich was when he did something like that and he realized, "Oh, that probably didn't go well." He could immediately shift gears and get over it, and it happened. And as we're walking to the car, Kevin turns to me and he says, I guess you would have preferred that I handled that differently." I just looked at him. So
that was classic.
Dr. Tim Tootin has been part of my life for a long time, and I will just say to everybody, go out, check out his book, Leading by Example. Watch him on WBAL-TV. Tim, not to blow smoke at you. Good luck with your ministry. But, Nestor, there's just not a finer guy in Baltimore media than Tim Tootin.
Tim, tell me about Sunday mornings and what you do there so you can invite people to your ministry. You know, aside from the book and the website, and everybody knows you from TV, and I know your son better than I know you, and, tell him I say hello.
I will do. In fact, the website, and again, you'll find all this. It's timtootintv.com.
Okay.
But if you want to look at our ministry, we stream, et cetera. It's come2harvest.org. come2harvest.org. We do a daily devotional. We do video. We do encouragement. We do a prayer wall. Visit, and we will certainly respond to you.
I have it right here. Harvest Christian Ministries. come2harvest.org. Really good to see you, visit you. Don's disappointed he can't hug you on the way out. And Mindy's, if I don't plug Delaware for Mindy, she'll be upset with me. So give Mindy a blue hen hug.
Before we run,
gentlemen, I certainly appreciate your time. Now that phase two is in, I got to go get a haircut. And I do need one badly. But
hey, Tim, so real before you run, talk to us about how the hat thing became a thing.
Oh, boy. Okay, so this is the deal.
All the different schools.
Me and Tony Pan were doing the Blizzard, it may have been 96, and we run out of things to do. And they said, just stay on the air. And I was like, and do what? So I start grabbing caps from under my desk. And so then I said, if you have a cap, send me one. And so basically, over many administrations at Channel 11, I'm the hat man. And so I just start saying, you send me one, I'll wear it. But it kept me inside for a good portion of time. And but what's going to change, Don, is with distance learning, there probably won't be any more snow days anymore.
That's true.
Not even in the Hereford zone, as I've pointed out, right?
No days Hereford will zone, be a thing zone, zone,
zone. Hey, Tim, appreciate you, Doctor, Doctor, Reverend, and TV guy, an education reporter, and our pal. You know, you shouldn't wear so many hats. You got nice hair, Tim. You know, hang in there.
It's nice and great to the finest people I know. Thank you for this opportunity. Have a great day.
You got it. Don Mohler, on behalf of all of us at Baltimore Positive, we're doing incredible conversations. We're talking about, obviously, race and challenges and urban situations and crime and policing, all of this on the backdrop of an election that happened here this week as well. Big appreciation for all of our sponsors. Let me start with Taharka Ice Cream. I'm going to hold the Wake and Bake up here. Coffee ice cream with a fudge swirl and chunks of fudge brownies. If you're listening for breakfast, that sounds perfect. Taharka made here in Baltimore. Also, our friends out at State Fair in Catonsville. Stop by. I did last week. I got chicken and waffles to go with the raspberry sauce. It was just perfect. I don't know what he puts on those fried chicken strips, but it's just pure love. There's no doubt about it. State Fair, order curbside, socially distanced. Got a big, big tent, open space, and they're opening a Mexican restaurant across the street. Cheers to Evan Brown and our friends at State Fair. Also, Fadley's. I curbsided two crab cakes, a bowl of crab soup, and mac and cheese a few weeks ago. I'm overdue. I got some French fries and coleslaw with that, too, but I ate those real quick on Lexington. Get down to Lexington Market. See our friends at Fadley's. You can ship those crab cakes anywhere in the world. And last but never least, Mohler & Gary Realty and our dear friend Jeff Mohler, Don's son, who is buying and selling homes and taking care of yours and listing your home from 6 feet away with a mask on, showing things virtually and getting deals done. That's what they're doing at Mohler and Gary. What we're doing here at WNST.net at AM 1570, talking to leaders, intelligent folks all throughout our community about ways to make Baltimore better. Raising the level of our conversation. He is Don Mohler. I am Nestor Aparicio. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, calm, local, Baltimore Positive.